McShane Bible Study, days 350 and 351. And we're starting in 2 Chronicles, and we're doing chapters 18 through 20. And so this is kind of finishing the story of Jehoshaphat. He gets a lot of chapters in this book, doesn't he? It starts out, chapter 18 says that now Jehoshaphat had great riches and honor, and he made a marriage alliance with Ahab. So that's the first big mistake, right? Mm-hmm. Ahab's family had gone because Ahab married Jezebel. Their family had gone away from the Lord. So that's probably not a good person to marry. But it doesn't really talk more about his wife. We see the story of them going. He goes to help Ahab, their family now, right? And Ahab wants to go to war, and he says, sure, I'll go to war with you, your family. Isn't it funny how kings, people in high places, make decisions for other people on such trivial things? Oh, sure, I'll go to war. Many of my people will die, but we're family. Let's just do that. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's kind of crazy when you think about it. It still happens today, but in different ways. He said, let's go to war together. We've already read the story in Kings. I'll try to be quick. Jehoshaphat does have a heart for the Lord. So he says, can't we hear from a prophet? That he brings out all the prophets of that are not of the Lord, and they all say you're going to win. He says, isn't there...
Well, they say they're of the Lord, but they aren't speaking.
Right. And so Jehoshaphat has a sense for this, right? He says, these don't sound like prophets of the Lord, even though they pretend to be. And so there is one, Micaiah, ever said that? And he comes out and he said, these are lying spirits. You're all going to be trounced. And he even says, verse 21, that the Lord showed him like a heavenly vision. And he says that a lying spirit, said, I will go out, 21, and he said, I will go out and will be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. And he said, you are to entice him and you shall succeed. Go out and do so. Mm-hmm. We must be careful who we listen to. Many people claim, Jesus, we read this last night in Matthew 24, many people will claim to represent the Lord. Mm-hmm. They might do signs and wonders. Mm-hmm. Right? Miraculous things. But we always should test the spirits. Does he truly represent the Lord? Or could there be a lying spirit here? Because that's what this situation was. Right? Mm-hmm. And so then he says, look, bad news, but he goes anyways. He has a heart for the Lord. That's why it's interesting. I would love to do a little study. I don't have time right now to read.
Maybe he did it because he said, my troops are your troops.
Maybe he felt committed.
He might have been like kind of hesitant, and Ahab was like, let's not listen to him. You said your troops were my troops. I'm going to take them.
Yeah, I mean, he'd given his word, so it might have been hard to go against that, but it was foolish to give his word before hearing what the prophet had to say, but also foolish to keep his word if the Lord said don't do it. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, you don't make the first mistake, so you don't have to worry about the second mistake, because it's no good to choose between the lesser of two evils. But in the end, you got to choose God's way, right? And so we see this mistake. And again, it would be interesting to study Jehoshaphat as seen by the zealousness of the writer of Kings versus the way the writer of Chronicles does show, hey, he made some serious, mistakes, sin, bad choices. Mm-hmm. Against God, but for the most part, he had a heart for God, right? But he just it's just mentioned here and there, whereas it's a little more obvious in Kings. And Chronicles talks a lot more about all the good things he did. He was a man of mixture, which is quite common, right? 28, so the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went up to Ramoth-Gilead. And so they cry out, but he cries out because they think Ahab sets him up
to be. He's like, well, if they're going to go try to kill the royalty, I think I'll kill my...
That? Was that my son-in-law, right? Because wasn't he marrying Ahab's daughter? Is that right?
I thought it was like his son marrying his daughter.
I don't know. Oh, maybe this just says marriage alliance. Your version might have said more.
Let me see what.
Okay, his son married Ahab's daughter. So that makes them. What does? I don't think there's really a name for that, but their kids are married together, right? Mm. So no wonder there's no talk of his wife. That doesn't have as big of an impact. You're not going to be as manipulated by a daughter-in-law as you are a wife. It's maybe not the nicest word to use, but we see that happen with many kings, right? I don't have all the kings straight, so I don't remember Jehoshaphat's son's name, but my guess is, and I think my memory without remembering his name, he's going to go astray because his wife, is his wife that woman that ends up... Yeah, she's the one that ends up killing all the people, right? That there's only one little boy left. Mm-hmm. So anyways, bad idea. Okay, so... 31, as soon as the captains saw it's the king of Israel, he cried out because he cried out to God, and they come after him because Ahab sets him up as like the king of the army. But he cries out to God, and God draws them away from him. So God's still working on his behalf. This is now 2 Chronicles 19:2. But Jehu, the son of Hananiah, the seer, went out to meet him and said to King Jehoshaphat, should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Because of this, wrath has gone out against you from the Lord. So it is mentioned here, you know, there's consequences for his decisions. Like he does have a heart for the Lord, but he's also mixing in with the ways of the world that are against the Lord, right? Well, it's family. I can't be against family. Well, that's not how the Lord looks at it, right? Mm-hmm. 9, and he charged them, then you shall do in the fear of the Lord in faithfulness and with your whole heart. I don't remember why. Oh, so Jehoshaphat is appointing, we're now on to all the good things he does. He appoints judges throughout the land to deal in matters of the Lord and in civil matters. With justice and righteousness for the people. So you see all the ways in which he's a really good king. And then we have this huge army of Moabites, Ammonites, and Meunites, which I guess are the Edomites. Meunites, I didn't even... more Ammonites, I guess. Anyways, and also Edomites are there. And they come against him. It's a big army. They can't handle it. So he cries out to God. And reminds him of his promises. And God says, look, don't be afraid. I will take care of this. And God turns the armies against each other. So they slaughter each other and gives them victory because they turned to the Lord, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't turn to some foreign army to save them. Mm-hmm. He turned to the Lord, and the Lord delivers them, right? 29, and the fear of God came on all the kingdoms of the countries when they heard that the Lord had fought against the enemies of Israel. So the realm of Jehoshaphat was quiet, for his God gave him rest all around. That's the same picture we see of an end times kingdom people. Mm. That trust, that fear the Lord only, that don't fear the ways of the world, don't mix with the ways of the world, aren't manipulated, impressed, confused by the ways of the world. But seek the Lord in his ways. Mm-hmm. Trust in him. Fear him alone. And he blesses a people. Mm-hmm. And then he makes that people a light to all those around him. right? Just since we mentioned it previously, it does say in verse 33, this is chapter 20, that the high places, however, were not taken away. We were confused by that, but I think that what we came to is he took them away when he was young, and the people rebuilt them. He didn't deal with them then. It's a little confusing. But then Eliezer, the son of Dodavahu of Maresha, prophesied against Jehoshaphat, saying, because you have joined with Ahaziah. So he's joined and made, again, an alliance with Ahab's son, right? Which, again, is still family. He's still locked into that family situation. And so he makes a, you know, a big investment in these ships, and they are destroyed. Because, again, he's mixing with the way of the world. God's trying to keep his people pure. It's just an interesting study of someone who, on one hand, has a heart fervently for the Lord. On the other hand, refuses to separate himself from all the world's ways. And then we move to Revelation chapter 7 and 8. And I see that I highlighted almost the entire book of, or almost the entire chapter of chapter 7 of Revelation last time. So I wanted to just kind of find something and not go in as great a detail this time. So I highlighted verses 3 and 4 saying, do not harm the earth. So he's just had this great 140, he sees four angels. They're in the corners of the earth. They're going to bring devastation on the earth, right? But he says, do not harm the earth or the sea or the trees until we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads. So before the devastation, certain ones are sealed on their forehead, right? Mm-hmm. On their mind, on their thinking. And I heard the number of the sealed, 144,000, sealed from every tribe of the sons of Israel. So it's describing 144,000 that have been sealed and prepared before this great devastation. And then let's go down to, so we go to this heavenly vision, right? There is this incredible difficulty coming on the earth. And then we see, let's see, I can't remember if I did 11, no, no, 13. Then one of the elders addressed me saying, who are these clothed in white robes and from where have they come? I said to him, so we have a tribulation going on, right? Mm-hmm. I said to him, sir, you know. And he said to me, these are the ones coming out of the great tribulation. So now we have, this goes great with what we talked about last night. We have some coming out of the great tribulation that are now able to stand before the throne of God. Let me back up to 12. Blessing and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be to our God forever. These are what the living creatures and the elders and the angels and these in white robes are doing. They're before the throne of God, right? So these are the ones coming out of the great tribulation. Well, what a blessing a tribulation is then if these come out of it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. If people are walking around, either think they are walking with God, but they're not, or they absolutely know that they don't even believe in God, or they're against God, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But great tribulation comes, and these come out of God, and they're able to enter the throne room of God, made clean by the blood of Jesus, then isn't that tribulation a wonderful thing? Mm-hmm. You see that? 15, therefore they are before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple. And he who sits on the throne will shelter them with his presence. You know, it goes on. It's lovely how it goes on, but I'll move on. Okay, chapter 8. So we see the seventh seal, the golden censer, the seven trumpets begin. We have the different angels blowing their trumpets. And the theme that I just picked up is a third of everything being destroyed, right? Which reminds me of what? A third of, can you think of a third of something? A third of the angels.
Oh, yeah.
Being thrown out of the good grace of God, right? That's, I don't know, that struck me because we see a third of everything being destroyed. Okay. Next, we look at Zechariah 3 and 4. And I guess we both sound a little roughed up. Got you clearing your throat there. I know I don't sound totally normal. So far, we're the only two.
Your fault for giving
me. Yeah, I gave it to you. Sorry. Okay, Zechariah 3, 1. Then he showed me Joshua the high priest standing before the angel of the Lord, and Satan standing at his right hand to accuse him.
Isn't it Joshua? You said Joshua.
What does yours say?
Joshua.
Yeah, that's probably a more correct pronunciation. The more common pronunciation is Joshua. See, it's all the same word. Jesus. You know that's the same name? Yeah. Well, our translators today want to distinguish them, which can cloud some meaning, but they want to separate the meaning for us so we kind of know who we're talking about. And so that's what they're doing, but it's all actually the same name. And so we see, you know, this is one of the coolest, like, throne room visions in the Bible, right? And verse 2, and the Lord said to Satan, the Lord rebuke you, O Satan, the Lord who has chosen Jerusalem rebuke you. Is not this a brand plucked from the fire? And so the Lord is saying this high priest is one plucked from the fire. This is the same picture we were just talking about in Revelation, right? Mm-hmm. Being plucked from the fire. Well, it's no fun to be in the fire. But if we get plucked from the fire and sat before or stood before the Lord in his throne room, what a blessing. 3, now Joshua was standing before the angel clothed with filthy garments. So he was not acceptable before the Lord, right? Verse 4, but the angel said to those who were standing before him, remove the filthy garments from him. And to him he said, behold, I have taken away your iniquity away from you, and I will clothe you with pure vestments. It's the same picture we just saw in Revelation, right? Mm-hmm. Now, of course, we know we just read this last night, Hebrews 10, that it's the Lord's blood, Jesus' blood, and our faith to walk into this place, behind the veil, into the throne room. But here we see long before that time in the, you know, history of time, this same picture being seen by Zechariah. Right? 7, thus says the Lord of hosts, if you will walk in my ways and keep my charge, then you shall rule my house and have charge of my courts, and I will give you the right of access among those who are standing here. This is, on one hand, extremely similar to the covenant that God has given his people over and over and over again. Right? Maybe most similar to Adam, because Adam had that access. Adam threw it away, right? But then he gave, you know, starting with Noah and then Abraham and then Isaac, Jacob, and then, you know, Saul, David, Solomon, again and again, right? God gives this promise. Oh, I missed Moses and Joshua, right? I mean, again and again, I'm sure I'm missing others. If you walk in my ways, I will bless you. It's very simple, right? But he says more. Here he says, if you will walk in my ways and keep my charge, then you shall rule my house and have charge of my courts. Those who have been faithful with little, I will give much, right? Read this last night in Matthew 24. Those I find tending to my people, I will put them in charge of much. It's the same picture here. And I will give you the right of, but this is what's cool. And again, what we talked about last night, I was debating it, but as I speak here, I think I'm going to put together last night's and the week before's, combine them into one and post them. It's here at some point. And I will give you the right of access among those who are standing here, giving the right of access to heavenly places. Mm-hmm. That's a powerful thing, right? Mm-hmm. That's the promise of the Lord for his end time people. Mm-hmm. That we have full access to God. That those in the second heaven are thrown down and that access is granted to those who are made clean by giving their lives fully to the Lord, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that what we want? What could be better than that?
Mm-hmm.
Hear now, O Joshua, the high priest, you and your friends who sit before you, for they are men who are a sign. Behold, I will bring my servant the branch. For behold, on the stone that I have set before Joshua, on a single stone with seven eyes, I will engrave its inscription, declares the Lord of hosts, and I will remove the iniquity of this land in a single day. So we see the seven eyes. This is the eyes of the Lord, but it's also a sign of the seven spirits of God, right? The fullness of God
mm-hmm.
in the spirit, in working in the earth through a person, through a people. And we see he's cleansed the land, right? He's made a holy kingdom in the earth. 10, in that day, declares the Lord of hosts, every one of you will invite his neighbor to come under his vine and under his fig tree, just as Micah 4 says,
mm-hmm.
right? Okay. Zechariah 4, we have the vision of the golden lampstand. Verse 2, and he said to me, what do you see? I see, and behold, a lampstand, all of gold, with a bowl on top of it, and seven lamps on it with seven lips on each of the lamps that are on top of it. So again, the seven lamps on a menorah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a picture of, it was before the, it was in the tabernacle, in the temple. It's before the throne of God. It's a picture of the seven mm-hmm. spirits of God, right? But also the seven eyes of God, because God sees. 6, then he said, this is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel. There's a couple really famous verses in this chapter. This is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel. And I misquoted this. You asked me why he's famous. And I said, it does have that. Well, I wasn't wrong, because verse 10 does say that. But I think this, I don't know, it doesn't matter. This is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel, not by might nor by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord of hosts. So when a king goes to another army because they have a mighty army, God says, mm-hmm. you're not walking in my ways. You should have sought me. It's my spirit will overcome these things, right? It's not your might. It's not your power. It's the power and might of my spirit, my grace. 7, who are you, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel, you shall become a plain, and he shall bring forward the top stone amid shouts of grace. Grace to it. Jesus said, if you have enough faith, you can tell this mountain to move and it will move. Well, here we see the same thing happening, right? God says, mm-hmm. I have appointed Zerubbabel. I will bring down the mountains. What are the mountains? Does anyone need to bring down a physical mountain? Does it accomplish anything to move Mount Everest?
Yeah.
No, but the mountains of philosophy, of ways of living in this world and worldly ways, they need to be brought down, right? 10, for whoever has despised the day of small things shall rejoice and shall see the plumb line in the hand of the Zerubbabel. So, don't despise the day of small things. God works progressively, and he does the most important work in small ways, personally, in us.
Mm-hmm.
Was Joseph ready to lead Egypt when he was a young boy, telling his brothers and dad that they were all going to have to bow down to him? Was he ready to lead Egypt then? No, it was the will of the Lord for his life, right? The Lord gave him the dream
mm-hmm.
that they were all going to bow down to him. They were offended by it. But was he ready for it?
Mm-mm.
No, what had to happen? His brothers had to betray him.
Mm-hmm.
He had to get thrown in a pit. He had to be sold into slavery. He started working his way up, being taught and trained by the Lord. And then he's accused of doing something he didn't do. It was immoral and incorrect. And so then he gets thrown in prison. He continues to work, and the Lord trains him and grows him, but he's stuck in prison. Mm-hmm. Are those glorious days?
No.
They're miserable, right? Those are the days of small things. Do not despise the day of small things. The Lord works out his will in his people individually. The great days come when they come, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the people are made ready to be a part of those things in the day of small things. God knows the end from the beginning. What's most important is that relationship we have with Him, where He trains us up in the little things that we go through on a day-to-day basis, right? Okay, that'll be it for today on that chapter. Weston wants to read a little psalm. This is Psalm 127:3.
Children are a gift from the Lord. They are a reward from Him. 4. Children born to a young man are like arrows in a warrior's hands. How joyful is the man whose quiver is full of them. He will not be put to shame when he confronts his accusers at the city gates.
See what a blessing y'all are to me? And I also like to 128. Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in His ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. So the same promise that we just talked about, for, you know, given to mighty men, it says this is the same promise to everyone. If you fear the Lord and walk in His ways, you will be blessed. It says your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots around your table. Are you guys olive shoots?
I'd like that because I'm not going to pick something off.
Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. I think that's olive shoots because that would produce olive fruit and olive oil, which is a big blessing. I love the couple of these. They're just similar theme to what we've been talking about. Psalm 123:2. Behold, as the eyes of servants look to the hand of their master, as the eyes of a maidservant to the hand of her mistress, so our eyes look to the Lord our God till He has mercy upon us. Actually, I highlight that one because I was listening to a Derek Prince this morning, and it reminded me a lot of what we were talking about last night. I highly recommend it. I'm actually not even done with it. It's called Judgment Must Begin at God's House, The Cost of Revival, Derek Prince. It's put out, this YouTube channel is Derek Prince with subtitles. And one of the things he said that stood out to me, you know, servants back in those days, they would stand and wait. It depends on the type of servant, but like a household servant would stand still and wait for his master to tell him to do something.
That's like a job Callum wouldn't like.
Yeah, Callum would struggle with that at 7, right? But if that was a job God wanted for him, and if he grew up into a man, he could do that, right? He could become that. But if I was asked to do that today, it would be a huge struggle for me today because I have not tempered my soul to the point of being able to. I can't tell you the last time. I don't know if there's ever been a time where I sat still for 2 hours straight and thought of nothing else but listen to God for something. Now, I've sought God for many, many hours and days and fasting and stuff, but I'm sure my mind would wander on different things. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But a servant in those days would stand there for hours until his master said, go do something. And I'm just putting myself in the place. How great would it feel when your master said, go do something? Even if it's not a very fun task he's telling you to do, you get to go do something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a different perspective on the matter. But so do we, when he talks about waiting on the, behold, as the eyes of servants look to the hand of their master. So he says, like these people do, as the eyes of a maidservant to the hand of her mistress, so our eyes look to the Lord our God till He has mercy upon us. So here the psalmist is saying, Lord, we seek You in that same way, that same fervency, that same devotion. That's powerful, right? I think we all need more of that in our lives. Psalm 125. Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved, but abides forever. It's the same thing we've just been talking about, right? Those who trust in the Lord, who fear the Lord alone, who seek for Him and His ways, cannot be moved. They're on Mount Zion. Every other mountain can be demolished, but the mountain of the Lord will rise above all. right? And I think we already kind of covered, I actually highlighted the first verse in 127. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. We just talked about this too. Doing things in our own power is foolish pride or fear of the world, one or the other. Mm-hmm. But if the Lord is doing it, then it's empowered and powerful and eternally meaningful. Mm. Make sense? So we should always train our hearts and our minds to seek the Lord in His ways, that our life is actually worth something and not foolishness. Mm. Right? Mm. Well, that's all I have for today. Do you have anything else?
No. God bless you.
God bless you.
The Lord bless you.